Hello and welcome back to another episode of On Spec. I'm your host, Ryan Brath. This was an unbelievable week in golf. Just golf. Men's golf, women's golf, amateur golf. Doesn't matter. Golf was busy and it's only going to get busier this week with a very, very large, we'll call it a major event coming up in Augusta, Georgia. But there was more than just, you know, that event coming up this week that took place in Augusta. There was the Drive, Chip, and Putt. There was the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Then on the LPGA Tour, we had the A&A Inspiration, which was, like, unbelievably exciting today. And then, not only that, we had Jordan Spieth winning in Texas. I didn't record how much time I spent covering and watching and paying attention to golf this weekend and just this week, but let's just put it this way. It was a lot. And we're going to break it all down here. But before we do, I have to let you know that OnSpec is brought to you by Titleist. And Titleist, well, actually, sorry, let me correct that. Titleist does, but so do I. And that's why I like partnering with them on the show. Want you to know that there is nothing that's going to help your game more than getting properly fit. And that means, for example, a new TSI series driver or fairway wood or hybrid. Or T-Series irons, or Vokey wedges, or a putter. It's all there, top to bottom. And, most importantly, the one piece of equipment you're going to use on every single shot, a golf ball. Get fit for your equipment. And when you work with a Titleist fitter, they're going to make sure that everything in your bag is set up correctly. That means, you know, adjusting the hosel settings on your driver, making sure you got the right shaft, the right loft. You're dialing in your spin. You're dialing in your launch angle. You're dialing in all of this stuff, and you're going to get that in a Titleist fitting. So head to Titleist.com to find out more and find out where you can get fit. You can find out information on all the clubs that they have available, which I kind of mentioned there just a moment ago. And, you know, I think it's so important for people to get fit. That's what this show is all about. This show is about promoting fitting, talking about, you know, creating education for yourself to, so you are empowered as a golfer, and there's no better place to get that type of empowerment than through a fitting. And like I said, you get Titleist.com, you'll get more information on the golf clubs, as well as more information on where you can get fit for said Titleist golf clubs. And don't forget the golf ball, key piece of equipment. All right, so let's get into this week in golf. And like I said, it was massively busy. We're going to start with the ANWA, or the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And that takes place at Champions Retreat on the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday they have off, and then they play Augusta National on Saturday. And it was extremely exciting to watch that take place. The winner was Tsubasa Kajitani from Japan. And, I mean, first of all, we had a playoff. We had an insanely packed leaderboard. And now, this is the point where I am going to go on my architecture rant about talking, you know, what it means to see different players play Augusta National. Because there's a lot of talk about, everyone wants to talk about the golf course. Everyone wants to talk about how entertaining it is and, you know, the birdies on Sundays and the pin placements and all of those different things. And we got a lot of that on Saturday, which made the event very exciting in and of itself. But you had a very packed leaderboard. And this is something that I think is a huge component of what makes a great golf course entertaining, and that is risk-reward. And what we saw was the women played from what are essentially known as the members' tees of Augusta National. And I think it plays at like roughly, like it's like 62, 63, 6400 yards, somewhere around there. And what we got to see because of the average carry and the different trajectory because of ball speed and all these things that you're going to see differently from the women's amateur game versus the highest level of men's professional golf is that ball speed, is that swing speed. And because of that, a lot of the holes that were par five, the par five essentially, became these very much risk-reward holes. And we saw some big swings, a lot of excitement. We also saw some other holes like, 11, which is the par four pond on the left there. Very famous hole. I think most people know which one I'm talking about when I say 11th at Augusta National. And they had in some cases, shorter clubs than what a lot of the men would traditionally hit into that hole because they moved that tee so far back. And because of that, you got to see some very aggressive shots where a lot of people, when you watch it on, when you watch the Masters, you hear about, oh, players will just bail right and then chip up to the green, famous Larry Mai shot. And, you know, that's what makes watch, to me, what I love about watching women's golf versus men's professional golf. It's not that I don't like watching men's professional golf, which we're going to get to in a moment, but it's such a different style and it's a different way to play. It's just a different game. It's a different way to watch golf. And it's also, as I talked about last week, a lot more relatable to the average player from a trajectory standpoint, from a rollout standpoint. And that's not always the case. I'm not saying across the board that's always the case, because you had, like, if we want to talk about the Anwal really quick before coming back to this, you had Patty Tavatanakit, who averaged 320 yards for the week. Okay, there's not a lot of male golfers that are averaging 320 yards. Let's be really frank about that. So when I talk about from the LPGA Tour to, like, the average golfer watching it, you know, not everything's relatable. Let's be real frank. I don't hit it that far. By any means, by any stretch of the imagination, I do not average 320 yards off the tee. I don't care how fast or how firm the golf course is. So when you add all of that up, you had someone like Tsubasa playing, and you got to see them hit, like, exciting shots on 18. Now, 18 really stood out for a number of reasons, because a lot of players were hitting drivers into the bunker that's through the fairway, and we've seen that that is a popular spot during the week. And in some cases, some players will play a 3-wood off the tee to hit short of that. I mean, Ian Woosnam, when he won, he just hit driver, and he was like, he's not a big dude, but he had a lot of speed. He would blast it over those bunkers and then hit up, and that was like a famous shot on 18 from him. Like, you see him walking through the crowd and all those things. But because a lot of the women amateurs hit a draw off the tee, that they couldn't hit that fade shot off that hole, so it became very entertaining to watch that. But you still got to see all of the shots into 18 into the green, hitting it above the hole, watching it come back. And overall, I just thought it was brilliantly exciting. You got to see a playoff. It was very unfortunate to see the shot that ended up in the bunker after it, like, missed right there. I thought it was a wonderfully brilliant, exciting amount of golf to watch. And, I mean, the scores were higher at Champions Retreat because the weather wasn't great. It was cool. But, I mean, it was just, I don't know what else to say. It was, if you are into golf and you like golf and you like to see it played in different manners and like to see younger players and players of different styles play golf courses from different yardages, watching the Anwa was I just thought it was so much fun. So much fun. And, you know, I'm very excited to see it next year. I know we didn't get it last year in 2020, but there was a lot of buildup from the 2019 version, Jennifer Kupcho and Maria Fassi. Like, that was exciting, watching them go back and forth and being able to see that again and see what, like, slow progress that we're getting from Augusta National. I want nothing more. And I've talked to a lot of my friends in golf. I'm not a big deal. Let's be honest here, folks. But I've talked to a lot of my friends in golf, and they're like, man, it'd be so much fun to watch the LPGA play on this golf course, because it's something that everyone's familiar with. And they have that with the ANA, the Craft Nabisco, like, same, they have that at that golf course in Mission Hills. But it's not, it's desert golf. It's still very entertaining to watch. I definitely sat down to watch a lot of it today. But, you know, it's different to see a golf course where you know that there's so much history there. And I would love to see that come down to that eventually. But we're going to get to the ANA in just a moment. But let's talk about the drive, chip, and putt. Let's stick with Augusta for a second, and let's talk about the drive, chip, and putt. I thought, overall, the event was really cool to watch. I know there are some people that are like, you know, maybe the age group should just be lowered a little bit because you're watching some of the older teenagers, blasting drives and hitting shots. It's kind of like, you know, they're very, very competitive golfers at this point. I don't know if that's really necessarily the spirit of the drive, chip, and putt at that point when we're talking about being able to compete in other amateur events. But nonetheless, it was very cool to see. It was neat to see them hit putts and hit shots around the chipping green. You got to see, I think, Justin Thomas was hanging around. You saw them watch players. You saw Bubba Watson. And that means a lot. You have to remember, like, how many steps that it takes for these kids to get there and how many events they have to win and just to qualify. And it's a big deal. Also, as some people that I watched it with pointed out, big day for khaki pants. Really, really big day for khaki pants at the drive, chip, and putt. And, you know, the shirts. But khaki pants ruled the day today, 100%. And so that was still, I think when you're able to showcase that to other kids who are curious about the game and have them watch it and just see that the pressure that they're under. You've got television cameras. You got your parents there. You got other kids you've competed against. You've got golfers that you've looked up to. I want to say your entire life, but when you're 10, I mean, and it's still your entire life, but it's still like you're 10 years old. But to see your heroes there and be able to interact with them and just like get a fist bump from a 2-time Masters champion, that's really neat. Like, how cool is that to think of that as a kid? I mean, as a kid, I just got dropped off the golf course. I played with my buddies. We maybe gamble for a chocolate bar once in a while, or we gamble for like a golf ball in our bag. If like one of us found a Pro V1, we gamble for that. I mean, that was the extent of my competitive golf as a kid. Like, I never got into any of those things. But to see the skill that they perform at was awesome. The one thing I didn't like, put it out on Twitter. Follow me along on Twitter, RDS Brath. Same thing on Instagram as well. Remember, you can follow the show along at OnSpecWRX on Instagram too. There's the first plug of the day. Is the pre-shot routines were so slow. And I get it. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, on the same hand that I'm sitting there being very critical of it, like, you know, you're lining up the putt. And I've said this, actually I said this the other day. You know, the big line on the ball, big thick Sharpie line, marker line on the ball, that seems like a lot at this point. I don't really like it at all. I don't putt like that. I always find the blank side of the golf ball because I never liked the idea of lining up. I'm also a very quick player. Someone asked me in the Q&A, which I'll get to a little bit towards the end of the show, like, well, you know, do you line your ball? And I said, no. What's your handicap? I said, I don't know. It's like, I don't know, 3-4. I don't keep track. Haven't kept track in a long time. And they'd say, like, when I'm, you know, middle of season, that's probably what my handicap is. Can it go a little bit lower? Can it definitely go a little bit higher? Absolutely. But I've never putt like that. I've always preferred to putt with no line on the ball. And you see these kids are like, they're lining it up. They're hitting the chip shots. They're walking around the hole. And it's like, oh, this is so painstaking. And you know why they do it? Because they've been given the opportunity based on the way they play competitive golf and what they see on television. And it just bleeds into this culture of like slower play in competitive golf. I know that I used to play in like club championships at like just a course that I was a member at when I was younger. And, you know, you'd see people, it's like 5.5 hours to play golf. Really? Like, it's infuriating. I can't do it. I can't do it. I've haven't done it in a long time. You know, I've gone off on the slow play right now. But I remember I used to call, when I lived very close to a golf course, it's a public golf course. Actually, it was a municipal golf course. And I because I was there a lot and I was a member, I got to know the people in the pro shop. So I'd call the day before and I'd say, hey guys, it's Ryan calling. I'm just curious, what's the earliest tee time? Can I go out before them? And because of the nature of talking to them and building a rapport with, and again, this is a golf course that was very close to me. And so I'd say, yeah, I'll be there this time. I'll pay for a cart today. Or most of the time I would walk, but sometimes I would take a cart. I'll be honest, I know I always talk about being a walker, but sometimes I would take a cart. And because maybe I had to go to work or something. And I would go in, I'd pay for the cart, and I'd be done in like less than 2 hours. 18 holes, less than 2 hours. Walking up, hitting putts, sure. Am I lining it up? No. But was my score dramatically different than if I like stood there and walked around? Not really. I mean, maybe a couple shots here and there, but that wasn't really the point of being out there. The point was to be able to go out, play, hit shots. Maybe I'd even hit a second shot off the tee. But to see these kids, like how that's built into their system to go out and like line up, hit the shot, look at it from four different angles. It's like, oh my gosh, this is painstaking. And the part of that that's like I found really frustrating was like on the green, where this created like this is a thing, is the fact that you've watched so many other people hit shots. You've watched so many other kids hit putts. You don't like, you're not going to analyze that at all. Like it's like, I don't get it. But nonetheless, beyond the being critical of this like very high pressure situation, which again, I would argue on the other side of it and say, you know, maybe they didn't really get a chance to walk up and hit these practice putts before. Maybe they got to play on a separate practice green, so they got to walk up. They got to act like they were playing a round of golf. I get it. I can argue from both sides. But to watch it and see it being perpetuated, this like idea of take your time, take your time, take your time, take your time. Don't do you're ready, all this stuff. It's I don't think it's necessarily great for the game as a whole. But, you know, nonetheless, it was still great to see these kids competing, and it was a lot of fun. And all credit to Augusta National and the PGA of America and USGA for having this event that was possible. Because, you know, it gives kids to be able to say that you can go to Augusta National, you can go with your parents, you can go with your coach, whatever it is, and be able to be involved in golf like that, it's cool. It's nothing more than being, like, really cool. And to think that if I was a kid to be able to do that, if I even really knew what the Masters was when I was 10, probably not. Maybe I did. I'm trying to think when. Because to me, like, the first Masters I remember really watching was, like, other than 96, so that would have been, I watched, like, a little bit of that. So I would have been roughly 10 years old, 11 years old. But I didn't really understand, like, what it meant. So that was cool. Tiger Woods won. And then after that, I remember, like, the big one that I watched was Mike Weir won, which I don't remember the year. But I just remember, like, sitting there and thinking, this is so cool. He's Canadian. He's going to win. And did it inspire me to be more of a competitive golfer? No, but it was still really awesome. So to have that on TV, have kids be able to watch it, and just to have other kids there, just thought it was really neat. So where do we go from here? Well, we're going to get to Jordan Spieth in a minute. Everyone wants to talk about Jordan Spieth. He's back. But I think there was something a lot, I don't want to call it more exciting, but it was definitely a build-up. And that was the A&A inspiration on the LPGA Tour, the first major of the year for the women. And again, Patty Tavitanikit won, but I think the whole leaderboard was unbelievable. I tuned in. I remember like once it finally came on after the Valero Texas Open, and I'm looking at the leaderboard. It's like, Lydia Ko is what? How many under par is she? She was 8 under through 10, and I think it was an eagle putt on 11. I think is what it was. And I'm like, holy smokes. Like, Patty started the day with a 5-shot lead. Like, she's just going to cruise. Like, it's going to be easy. It's not going to be a big deal. She's going to go out there. She's going to win. And then you tune in, you're like, holy smokes. A couple of mistakes on this golf course. And, like, this is going to be a barn burner. Like, this is going to be extremely exciting to, like, watch this finish. And it was exciting nonetheless because there were some Lydia missed a green and then chipped it really close. Patty missed a shot and she hit it really close. Afterwards, she almost hold a chip shot. And it was, I mean, I know Patty missed a fairway at one point, made a par and a par five. I thought, oh man, like this is coming down to it. Like at this point, like if any one of these players, especially on Patty's case, because she had the lead, if she misses a couple shots coming in, this could get very tight. And we saw separation on the leaderboard by those top players, which shows how well they were playing, especially Lydia, because she is someone who hasn't been, I mean, recently she's definitely had her play slowly improving. And I know it was a Monday Q on Twitter kind of asked about it. He's like, can you think of how old Lydia Ko is? Like, she's a veteran now on the LPGA Tour. And for Patty, she's a rookie who, like, just turned 21. And now you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, how long has Lydia Ko been around? Like, she won, mind you, the Canadian Open at 16 years old. She's 23. And she has been number one in the world. She's struggled. And she's bringing her game back at 23. That's freaking insane. Like, when you think about what that means to, like, the up and down of someone's career, and to be 23 and, like, I'm building back up to, like, where I was as a freaking teenager. Like, I don't know. I don't know when I played my best golf in my life. I can think of a time when I was, like, really good, or I felt like I was playing really good, let's put it that way. And to think that, you know, at 20-something years old that you've lost it and you've got to get it back again, like, that's nuts. I'm in my mid-30s, and I think to myself, my best golf is still ahead of me. I still feel like I'm getting better. Every year, I feel like I'm getting better. I'm progressing, whether it be, like, a swing speed thing or hitting certain shots or learning short game or improving my technique or even just improving my knowledge of being able to hit certain shots and understanding golf courses and playing off slightly different grasses and all of these different things. I still feel like I'm getting better. Have I had years where I felt like I just sucked? Of course, it's like I think every golfer has had that. But to think that, you know, at 23, you've had this, you've been number one in the world, you've come back down, and now you're building your way back up again, is like, it's hard to fathom. I mean, as someone who is, I don't know, again, in my 30s, hard to fathom. Unbelievably hard to fathom. But like, huge congratulations, Patty. She averaged over 320 yards off the tee, and just like absolute killer out there. We saw strong short game play. I think she was over 80% in her fairways as well. And that's where as I mentioned before, this is where I think a lot of people can learn a lot from the LPGA Tour. They hit more fairways, they hit more greens, and they don't really screw up very often. I remember going to the Canadian Women's, CN Women's Canadian Open a couple of years ago when it was at Magna Golf Course, which is located just north of Toronto. And I think it's like Aurora. Yeah, Aurora is the area, but it's just, we'll call it north of Toronto. And it's a big members golf course. And I remember sitting on a par four. I want to say it was the 10th hole. Yeah, I think it was like one at the start. It might have been the 10th hole. And watching players hit off the tee. And it was the Pro-Am. But still, like playing from their own normal tee decks, I feel like I could have parked my chair at like one spot on the hole and just watched them all hit their approach shots from roughly this, like, I don't know, 15-yard back, 15-yard forward area in the fairway. It was insane. They really don't miss that many shots. It's unbelievable to watch. It's so much fun to watch it. And I think to myself, like, again, I haven't played a lot of golf this year yet. And watching someone like NB Park just like hit fairways, get it close to the green, make a couple putts, put yourself in the position. And like I mentioned earlier, right, Augusta National, a lot of people talk about it as like a friendly golf course for members. You can get around there as a bogey golfer and just shoot your 90. Like, it's not that difficult. Where the difficulty lies is in the greens and being able to putt them. And if you put yourself in a position to hit a chip shot, like, that's where I think a caddy plays a very important role on a course like that. And a caddy plays a very important role in general for someone who has not played a golf course very often or has trouble getting around a golf course. I think there are ways that for a lot of players, when they have, especially we're talking about a bogey golfer here, the guidance of, look, this is where we're aiming, because if you miss over here, you still have a shot to chip up. You can potentially make par. You're probably going to make no worse than bogey. So there you've got your bogey. But for the better player, what you do when you have this golf course that is designed a certain way is you create the opportunity of saying, hey, you can make a birdie here. There's like, it's not a long approach shot. It's a fairly wide fairway. But, you know, you still, if you miss this shot and you really go for it in this smaller area per se, you bring a hazard into play, you bring a deep bunker into play, because you have to aim at it to give yourself a better opportunity to make that said birdie. And that's where you have this interesting element of great design. And that's where, you know, watching the ANWA was just exciting. Because you knew, like, was it 15, the par 5? That's a tough shot. It's not an easy shot. It's not a very wide green. It's a very sloping green. The pin was at the back, if I remember correctly. And that's just a tough shot. And you have 13, another par 5. You had 16. 16, they kind of had it in the bowl there, the traditional Sunday pin where it kind of feeds down. But because the trajectory was different for those players, because even on when the men play it, they're hitting mid to short irons in. That's all it is on that hole. And, you know, it's easy to kind of play to your target, have it roll down the hill. But because the trajectories were slightly lower, because of club head speed and all these other things, you had it where you had to play a different shot. The course played differently, and that made it entertaining to see. And overall, this week at the ANWA, it's a course that is very much set up for them. They play it every single year, and I was stuck to my seat, really. Like, it was just, even with the big lead by Patty, to see Lydia Ko up there and just be like, oh my God, she could shoot 59, she could shoot 58, and what became what you thought was going to be a very routine win for Patty became, a couple mistakes, and you could really, put yourself into a tie. You could fall behind. But overall, like great week of golf. Now let's talk about the next one, big one on the PGA Tour. Jordan Spieth won for the first time, what, like 3 years? And I thought it was really exciting to watch. There was never a time during the telecast where I thought, oh, that was a really bad shot. The one that I saw, I think, was like the layup, the second shot on 18, where he kind of pulled it over towards the scoreboard there. And I thought, you know, that wasn't very good. But he still got like a two-shot lead. He's over there. He can hit up to the green. I think he kind of took some of the bunkers out of play. It was just one of those things where he worked his way around the golf course very well. Now, for players, when we talk about being able to score, and I said earlier, like the bogey golfer, right? Like, if you're a smart bogey golfer, you can play bogey golf. You can play to the fat side of the green. You can play away from the hazards. You can play to the right side of the fairway, the correct side of the fairway, to make sure that you have an angle that you can work your way into the green. You can get back to being in position. And Charlie Hoffman, like, really did that today. I thought it was, again, he's not a bogey golfer. That's not what I mean when I say that. But he put himself in a position to get up and down. His wedge game was unbelievable. I thought it was funny when he hit the chip shot off the rocks when he missed it and got himself out back out into the fairway. All I could think of was, this is why it's great to be on staff with an OEM. If I was looking at that, I'm going, okay, well, if I'm playing with my buddies, honestly, I'm probably just going to drop it and like take a shot and just go over there. Or, you know, maybe I'll like, you know, if it's a junky wedge or something like that, which I mean, I don't really carry older golf clubs a lot of times. I mean, I play with older clubs, but I don't really want to like put a massive gash in my wedge. So I'll just, you know, I'll go over there. This isn't serious. I don't care. But like to see him just go, okay, I'm going to hit this. And then all I can think is, man, sweet. Is he just going to get any wedge tomorrow? That's a really nice luxury to have. But speaking of clubs, and that's what this is what I wanted to get to. I know this is like more towards the end of the show. But this comes back to something that I talked about, I don't know, a number of shows, actually like quite a while back. It's slump busting. Talking about busting a slump by using either changing your clubs up or going to see a fitter or going to get gapping or going to see if there's really an issue with your equipment. But for Jordan, he hasn't changed anything. I mean, over the time, yeah, he got a new TSI driver in the bag. He never really changed his wedge setup. He's been using the T100 irons. He's got basically the same Vokey wedge setup. And he hasn't changed anything. And that was one of the things that I read a lot about today. After he won, all the affirmation of the hard work and the progress, quote-unquote, hashtag progress, that he made. And it's been exciting to see him since Pebble Beach, kind of slowly, I think it was Pebble Beach, right? Slowly work his way up. And just like continue to play better. And it's really culminated. And we have the Masters next week. And he's won it once before, which has the golf Twitterverse on freaking fire, which is like fun if you're into that thing. And I follow along, remember? Second of the day. RDS Brath on Twitter. Same person, me, on Instagram. And on SpecWRX as well, which is the show's page. And to me, the whole idea of progress. And for him, he still worked with the same coach, kept the caddy, didn't change his clubs, didn't change his putter. And, you know, recently we found out it was a bit of a wrist injury. I believe that he didn't want to make an excuse about not making a change, and that he was making compensation. There was all this stuff going on in his golf swing. You know, you saw it all the time. Like you'd watch things and you'd hear a commenter say, you know, give me an hour with Jordan Spieth and I'll fix his golf swing. I'm like, okay, well, good luck with that one. Cause obviously like, I think he's pretty good and the people he's working with pretty good. I mean, he's been very successful up to this point. And it's just this idea of if you are struggling, sometimes, again, for him, it was obviously an injury and a swing thing. But it doesn't mean that you're not trying new things. It doesn't mean that you're not working towards something. And this is where it's very important if you maybe have new equipment to look towards, especially if you got fit for it. But either way, if you've just bought something new or you know that it's better than what you had before, whether it be based on your swing speed or lie angle or loft or just new clubs in general, if you've got new clubs for yourself that are better than your old ones, sometimes there is an adjustment period there. And this is obviously not the case with Jordan. But sometimes it just means sticking with it and looking at the positives. Because in some cases, you will have players who will get a driver. And the new driver is really designed to help eliminate a two-way miss. So if you miss right and left all the time, and say you're a fairly neutral player, but you prefer to miss to the right. Well, you know, maybe you miss once, maybe if you really miss one, you might miss a little bit more to the right than you're used to. And you're like, oh, this, I'm never over there. But then you realize on other holes that you were like, maybe you'll miss left more. All of a sudden you're like, okay, well, actually I didn't miss over there at all. And it's really good. I'm actually in a better position over here. And that is the slow idea of progress, because you have to be able to look at the positives, because one bad swing can really create a big number on your scorecard. And that can either be because it was a really bad swing, it was way out of place, and it was like an OB shot or a penalty shot, or then you compounded the issue because you made another mistake, and instead of making bogey, you made a double or a triple. So on your scorecard, you're like, oh, this is like a big score, this sucks, right? But it could also mean that on a number of other holes, you didn't miss that big because you would have normally missed the other direction and you made a par. Or you felt like you made a really good swing and you hit it further than you normally would, or you just like really caught one and you saw the ball flight, you saw the window, you saw everything that you're looking for, and now you're further down the fairway and you have a shorter club into the green and you made a birdie on a hole that maybe you struggle on sometimes. It can be the same with irons, right? When it comes to gapping. A lot of players struggle when it comes to getting a new set of irons, whether it be something that is longer or shorter, and just dialing in distances. It can become more difficult, whether it be, you know, working on a certain trajectory, working on a certain spin. I know for myself, and I've done some work on my wedge grinds recently, I got new wedges last year, and I struggled originally with hitting certain shots of them. And I thought, okay, well, this is disappointing because this is kind of the grinds that I thought I would need. And overall, like, I stuck with it because, again, course conditions change throughout the year, which is the big reason why I got them in the first place. And then my technique has actually changed over the winter, which is why I've done, like I said, some wedge grinds. You can check it out, post it on Instagram, posted some of the wedge grind work that I did. And for me, it was like, okay, is it me or is the equipment? Well, first of all, my technique has already changed. This is like last year early. So I'm working on something and it's not really paying off. But when I hit a good shot, it's like way better than my like average shots before. So I stuck with it. And over the season, I saw a lot of progression that got better and validated the fact that the equipment that I got was better for me. And that's one of the questions I get a lot when I do these question and answers. I do them on Instagram, Artist Breath, I do them on Friday afternoons, usually around noon, post it, do a couple hours of Q&A until either I fill it up or I'm not really getting any more questions at that point, which doesn't really happen. Or I'll do a live where I'll ask earlier in the day, ask questions, I'll go live on Instagram and I'll just answer them, which sometimes in this format allows me to talk a little bit more, maybe use a video reference, maybe use like a prop of some sort in the video to really go deeper because, you know, Instagram, I'm writing things out. It's a little bit harder, a little more difficult to really explain more in depth what I'm trying to get to on a certain subject. But a lot of questions I get is, oh, you know, I had this, I tried this, I liked it in the fitting, or I went out to the golf course, I'm not really seeing results, or I got this new one, or I bought this new shaft, I'm trying it out. What's really the difference? Which is hard for me to, because I don't have any of your numbers. I don't really know anything about your golf swing. You're just asking me the difference. So I'll try and do my best to explain like shaft A, shaft B, head A, head B, how they might work together, all of these different kind of elements coming together to create a certain shot shape for a player. Sometimes they'll give me swing speed. I'll ask about tempo. I'll ask about misses. I'll ask about some launch monitor numbers if it's possible. And I'm here to help. That's the whole point when I do these question and answers, to help as much as possible. But for yourself, when you're trying to figure out your equipment, I want to let you know that I've been there when it comes to being frustrated. I've been there when it comes to trying to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And we have definitely seen that with Jordan. He didn't change his equipment. He didn't change his coach. He didn't really change his technique. He was just working on the same thing over and over and over again. And, you know, to think of the poise that he had to go into interview after interview and be like, what's wrong? What's not working? Are you changing anything? Are you working on anything? And just to say, listen, I'm working on the same thing. I'm working with my coach. I'm frustrated as anyone else would be involved, but I know that I'm seeing progress. And look, I'm not saying everybody gets to go see a super awesome coach and work for 6 hours, you know, a week, because that's not your job. Your job is probably to do whatever your job is and then go play golf when you have the opportunity. So, you know, you're not going to go to your simulator every day. Now, that would be sweet. I do realize that I have a little bit of that available, but I don't use it every single day. I just don't have the time. It's not my job to go hit golf balls every day. If it was, that'd be freaking sweet. But my job is to inform people of golf equipment and, you know, occasionally test stuff. But that's not my job. That's Jordan Spieth's job, is to play the best golf he possibly can. And for yourself, you have to, if you are someone who is investing in your game, if you're listening to the show, I can probably imagine, and again, based on the people that I talk to that reach out to me, whether you are trying to break 90, trying to break 75, trying to break 80, I don't care. You have your own perception of your game, what's working, what feels good, what shots you're missing, what shots you don't like hitting, what shots you're uncomfortable with. All of those different elements are something that you perceive. This is why I like the data tracking software. This is why I like using what I use, which is the Arcos and the Link. I paid for that. They're not paying me to tell you that. I paid for that stuff. And to be able to use Arcos and get that information, my perception versus what is like the reality, I realize it's probably pretty close, but I know what I have to work on. But for a lot of people, the perception, because you don't play, maybe you play once a week, maybe you get to practice once a week, and it's harder when you go out and you don't see the quicker progress that you are hoping to see. In some cases, for some players, it's going to click. But a lot of people you'll hear from will talk about, I got a lesson, it didn't work, I went back to my old swing. Okay, well, did you practice at all? Did you even work on it? Did you just like hit like two bad shots and go, screw it, I don't like the way this feels in my golf swing, I'm going to go back to it. Yeah, that can be uncomfortable. It can be really uncomfortable. I can tell you right now, as a younger golfer, two things that were the hardest thing to change ever when it came to my golf game. One was my grip. I used to be someone who had an interlock grip, and like a bunch of my friends went from interlock grip to the just like the standard kind of overlap. I don't know what the names are. I'm trying to think of what they are. It doesn't matter. Interlock went to overlap. I hated it. I was like, okay, this is not helping me. This is like, there's something about it. It doesn't feel right. And I don't generally wear gloves, so that wasn't even like the big issue. I just didn't like it. And I realized that this is, to me, it actually was better. It was better for my golf game. And after a few months playing, I didn't really think about it anymore. And I had the benefit, being a kid, I didn't really have a job at that point yet, that I got to play a lot of golf anyways. So because of that, you know, I got to practice, I got to go out and chip and hit. So imagine trying to make a grip change if you don't do that, if you don't do any of those things. And when coaches talk to people that are trying to improve their game, regardless of your skill level or whatever it is, a grip change can be done in front of your television. You're sitting there watching golf, you have a grip, you have a golf club, you have your wedge, just sitting there, just like make grips, build in the idea of the confidence of what that feels like. That's something you can work on by yourself. It's easy to do. The second thing, changing my shot shape. And like a lot of players, as a younger player, I had one shot that I was super confident in, and that was the low hook, because it went further, it ran out a lot more, and basically it just went further. Like that was the whole goal. And as the famous golf quote, I don't know who said it, hookers eat hamburger, faders eat filet, because a fade generally goes higher, it's easier to stop. You know it's not going to go as far offline, because if you hook a shot and it's running, it's going to run a lot further into trouble versus a fade where it lands, it might not necessarily roll as far. And when it comes to modern golf ball technology, you can hit a very low spinning fade. That's not really a problem anymore. But you still see that idea of being able to control trajectory. And I worked for a full year trying to hit a fade. I would go out and I worked at a golf course, so I got to hit a lot of golf balls, either before or after work. I'm not saying, confirming, or denying that maybe once in a while I would hit golf balls at work. But nonetheless, you know, when you go pick the range, you got to go find golf balls. You can't drive the carts into the certain areas, so you got to have a club with you to like hit shots back, hit them out of the weeds to go like collect them with the range finder or the range cart. So I was still working, right? I mean, it was work. So all of this in mind, to be able to work on that over and over and over and over and over again, I became a lot more comfortable hitting a fade. And now it's actually, to me, the harder shot to hit is like a draw shot. Doesn't mean I can't hit a low hook. That's still something that's relatively easy. You just smash down and it goes right, works its way left. But to hit the fade was something that I was not comfortable with at all. I didn't like it. It didn't feel right to me. And now my natural shot is a fade. That's what it is. And it became natural. So to the point where like going the other way actually feels more unnatural. I still try and hit one with a driver, but I prefer to hit the fade because I know where it's going to go. I feel more comfortable and more confident, and even if I maybe in some cases give up a little bit of yardage off the tee, that's okay because I can hopefully find it and, you know, play a shot from there. And that leads back to watching a lot of golfers, you know, hit more fairways, hit more greens, you're going to score better. And, you know, for myself, that's how I think about it. And for Jordan, I'm not talking about drivers or fairways, any of that stuff. But for him, it's about working and working and working towards progress. So for yourself, if you've got new equipment or you are out there practicing, be confident in the process of what you're working towards, because it can be very uncomfortable. For Jordan, I can imagine for the last couple of years, it has been very, very, very uncomfortable. You don't have to finish your round of golf and go in and answer a question and be like, what happened today? So you made a triple on six, you lost a ball on seven, and you three-putted four greens. What was the key to your 87 today? And you're like, well, I wasn't really feeling confident on the tee. It wasn't working. I thought I hit a fade, and I really faded and blew it into the pond and then compounded my mistake and shanked it and all that stuff. Like, you don't have to answer those questions because no one cares that you shot 87. I know it's like a club pro guy thing, but I mean, sure you care. I'm not saying that your golf isn't important. That's more of a joke. So if I have to clarify the joke, I apologize. But it's more of the idea of you don't have to go answer to people that are going to post about it online all day and say, this is what's wrong, this is how we can fix it. This is to be able to go through that and come out the other end. Huge kudos to Jordan. And it seemed like he was very, very happy to win today. Very much a relief, although he's been playing very well. And it must feel pretty nice to be able to know that you're playing great golf heading into the first major where you are a past champion. And if you take anything from that, if you take anything from what I've talked about today, whether it be drive, chip, and putt, the ANWA, the ANA, or in this case, Jordan, it's about always working towards something. The kids, the drive, chip, and putt, always working towards, this is their big goal. This is like their big event, to be able to go to Augusta National and putt on the greens and hit chip shots. That was their goal. That was their end, what they wanted to achieve. And of course, I'm sure they're thinking of bigger and better things. For the ANWA, Augusta National Women's Amateur, you know, they to play towards that, you had players who were like fifth-year college players who stuck around to be able to have eligibility to qualify for the event, which is really neat. You had all of that going into this. And that's to be able to walk the same grounds that, you know, many master champions have in the past, and a golf club that has, you know, had its fair share of things that it didn't do right in the past, if we're going to be very friendly to that. And to know that they're trying their best to create progress, and they're trying their best to see the mistakes that they made in the past, and hopefully it leads to an LPGA Tour event. 100% seeing a Masters there, an LPGA event, would be sweet. Who wouldn't want that, honestly? Like, it's really plain and simple. Who would love to see that? And while we're at it, seeing it at the TPC Sawgrass, too, would be spectacular. But, okay, I digress. So you have all of that going on. And it was just, you know, it's really cool to see. To see people playing their best at an event that they've worked very hard to get into is just exciting. It's inspiring to be able to watch people do really great things at what they want to be great at. And we, you know, we're going to get that at the Olympics. We're going to get that at a whole bunch of stuff. And that's what makes just sport in general so entertaining, because you never know what you're going to get. Maybe was that Forrest Gump? I guess that was Forrest Gump. You know, life's like a box of chocolates, very famous line. So, you know, that's what drives people to watch sports. And in my case, it's golf. I love watching it because although it is the opposite of, say, something like, man, well, maybe cliche at this point, F1, where it's just fast, 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 lots of action, all kinds of stuff. It just never stops. Whereas golf, like, there's this tension. It's like this building tension. And that's what makes it really cool to watch, because you're like, you know, this shot on Thursday, not a big deal. This shot on Sunday, over the water, slightly from the rough, into the wind, two-shot lead, a lot could happen. You hit it really close, big win, hit in the water, that's not good at all. It's going to create even more trouble. And that's where the tension comes, that's where the excitement comes in. And because you get to see people excel at it, we got to see someone like Jordan Spieth, just like Lydia Ko, who did not win today, but played freaking amazing, is that you saw greatness. You saw someone who was very young achieve so much and then have problems. And now coming back and playing better. And that's why we're locked in, people. That's why we watch it. Very lucky to be able to say that, you know, I got to watch golf today and talk about it because it's part of my job. I'm going to write a lot about it today, too. I'm going to write a lot about it coming week. And hope you enjoy the show. You know, it wasn't so much about club fitting today. I think I tried to work something in there because I think it's important, because the idea of progress when it comes to getting new equipment, or even if you're struggling with what you're using now, to know that, A, if I haven't changed anything and my clubs haven't changed, something's obviously not working as us as a team. So you can go see someone to find out about it. Or it just means, you know, in some cases, like Ben Hogan would say, find it in the dirt. And that's where you're going to get it. You know, working real hard will pay off. And being confident and remembering to, you know, persevere and work towards that goal and look at the positive. I try and look at the positive. I feel like I'm a positive person. I'm not always the most positive person on the golf course, but I try and convey that positivity because I think it's important for myself. When I go out and play golf, I have fun. It's a game. At the end of the day, it's a game. We all enjoy it in certain ways, whether, again, break 90, break 70, who cares? If it's a personal best, it's a personal best for you. And take pride in being able to know that you did your absolute best at whatever you're doing today. We see that in professionals, we see it in amateurs. And whatever you're going to do today, if you listen to this, try whatever it is to be your person. Even if it just means being kind and nice to somebody, do that. There we go. Parting words for the day. Remember, you can follow along RDS Brath, Twitter, and Instagram. You can follow the show along as well at OnSpecWRX. Really hope you enjoy the show this week. And as always, thanks for listening. Thank you.